www.thebrainfarm.com.
This is Chris Evans recording a Storage Unpacked podcast, and I'm here with Martin again this week. How are you, Martin?
Yeah, not bad. How are you, Chris?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad at all. Not bad. Here we are. Blue Monday.
You do know that's a complete marketing scam, and Blue Monday Absolutely. Doesn't really exist.
Yes, entirely. Yeah. But you've got to mention it, haven't you? People do.
There's only one good Blue Monday, and that's New Order Track. That's it.
That is entirely true, and that might make me go and put that on after we finished recording.
Good.
So let's get into this week's recording, just you and I. And I just wanted to touch on something from last week, and that was the discussion we had about the H10, the Intel H10, which here's the little container it's sitting in. It's quite neat, isn't it?
Looks oh, quite, yeah, it's quite neat.
Quite cool. Yeah. Yeah. And last week we were talking about this as a potential option for extending the capacity of my Mac Mini. And within that, to see whether or how it would perform with the Optane and the QLC together. Now, as it turns out, as they say, and caveat emptor, buy beware, read the manual, all that sort of thing, RTFM before you start. It turns out that, in fact, the H10 isn't a hybrid drive in the sense that we might think it is, but instead presents two independent drives onto one PCIe bus on the NVMe bus, if you like. And that then needs software at the host level to actually manage the caching.
And I didn't get that. Could you try again?
Okay. That was an interruption from Siri. So that's really not helpful, Siri. Because
I should leave that in.
I'm sorry.
You should be. That's not helping the conversation whatsoever. I'm going to turn you off. Well, isn't that amazing?
I'm not going to say
a
word.
I've never seen it do that before. You try and get it to do it and it doesn't work, and I'm sure I turned it off, but I think because I've upgraded the I upgraded the OS last night, it's obviously decided to re-enable Siri without asking me. Stupid phone. Anyway, so where was I? Right, so, Intel H10 looks like two separate independent drives on the same bus. So then you need the software at the host level to actually manage the caching process, which isn't great because you can't see the Intel component, sorry, the Optane component, unless you are running a certain version of processor, a bit like persistent memory. Now that to me just seems like a massively missed opportunity. And it's very disappointing because it performance-wise, it runs no faster than my other SSD, which is sitting here. And this is this lovely little SanDisk one, which I got a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. I was hoping that Intel might have done something clever. But as you said, caveat emptor, we should have gone and looked at reviews and the documentation before we went down this route.
Yes.
Well, hopefully Pat will sort it out.
Oh, yeah. He's going to come back and solve everything, isn't he?
Yeah.
In about 5 years' time.
Yeah.
Never mind. It is what it is. I will just hold on to it for another time. But yes, it is disappointing, and it would be nice if it wasn't like that. But I'll live with it for now. However, that's not our topic of the day. But our topic of the day is something similar in the sense that it is related to software, the component we were just talking about there that would manage this hardware. Now, one of the things I think that's really interesting, looking back over the last sort of 10 years of technology, maybe a bit longer, maybe 15, is that we've seen a massive increase in the use of what you might call software-defined storage, or just generally a migration towards features being in the software component of storage systems, and a whole range of other deployments and applications, which we'll come on to. And I thought it might be interesting to look at whether we think SDS has actually been a success, whether it's actually delivered on what we thought it might do 10 years ago, and where we think it might go next. So that's our topic of conversation for today.
Cool.
What do you think? First guess.
Yeah, I think that would be it's an interesting conversation. I mean, I think we all remember when the hype started.
Yep.
I remember the pushback from EMC. EMC, well, why would you want to do that? Why would you want to build your own storage? Why would you do a software layer? Surely you just want one bottom to kick when things go wrong. Why would you want it run on commodity? All those arguments. But I think we've really much seen SDS almost become the default option for most things, even if it's been packaged as an appliance.
Yes, exactly. So let's talk about a bit more background about that and just dig into some details so we can see how we've ended up where we are. And I think the first thing to think of is, you know, what have we gone through in terms of evolutions of SDS? And I try to put down a list, and I've done this before a number of times. I've used this list. You could modify the list and add or take away things. But in general, I think we saw probably maybe five steps so far. First one was really hardware separation, where we saw people say, well, we could just take our own hardware. We'll give you the software. Off you go. Pay for a license for the software. And it runs like it did before. It just means that you've just bought the two components separately. And that's fair enough.
Yeah, and then, I was going to say, Chris, quite a lot of those are built on open source.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I mentioned Nexentra in this list. And of course, that was an open source product and used open source components and used things like ZFS, ZFS. So I guess a lot of them were like that. But that isn't the exclusive, is there? I mean, there are probably plenty of others we could think of.
Yeah, there was OpenFiler, FreeNAS. I believe FreeNAS has gone on massively and is quite a serious system these days if you want to run something in, certainly for a small business or an advanced hobbyist. I see quite a lot of discussion about it on the forums, what it can do. So, yeah, I think it's really got a foothold in some places.
It's interesting you say that one, because I looked at that, I don't know what, 6 months ago, looking at thinking, well, what would I put in the lab in terms of some sort of generic file server? Because I needed something. And I looked at it and said, I could just put this on a physical server and use the physical server. And it worked really well, really neat, really quick. My biggest challenge was I didn't have enough storage connected to that particular server in order to make use of it. But what I could do is connect some, believe it or not, SAN storage to it. But I couldn't get it to work because it uses a version of Unix. I think it might use BSD Unix or something like that. It did. So getting drivers that would work with my Emulex cards and stuff, I just couldn't get it to work as with a target. So there's one of the problems with a lot of the SDS solutions, that, you know, you've got that big compatibility thing to think about.
Yeah, definitely. There's the HCL or hardware compatibility list. And if it's not on there, it's not coming in. I found often some of these products are actually worse than for that than say things like a VMware ESX, where things didn't work on it, but if you were prepared to go off menu a bit, people have done the modules, you don't see that quite so much in things like FreeNAS and OpenFiler.
Yeah. So that's the first step. The second step was we started to see the emergence probably 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago, of what I would class as bespoke SDS solutions. Now, the most obvious ones here are the object storage platforms, I think, if you look across the market. But obviously, there are other things like Weka, which is a file solution, but that came a bit later. But generally, I wonder whether the object storage market was a real sort of obvious target for this sort of technology.
It turns out it has been. I mean, pretty much all of the object storage vendors will sell you a software. A lot of them will try and sell you an appliance as well. But software does seem to be a very common deployment option. Yet again, they'll have fairly rigid HCLs. But yeah, you can just buy the software.
Yeah. And then the next stage, actually, funny enough, guess what? The appliance and the package side of things, where in actual fact, a lot of those vendors realized that, you know, that people didn't want to actually build solutions themselves. So they came out with their own HCLs. They narrowed down the list of hardware you might use, and they produced their own HCL list. So you ended up with that, as you said, that like package solution, but it still really is still software. It's not separate at that point, is it? So, you know, I think that's quite a good modeling for a lot of people.
Yeah. You see, the thing I have with this, the appliances, is then the boundaries between what a storage array is, a hardware storage array, and what a storage appliance is become very, very blurred very, very quickly.
I've used the word appliance there, and you're right. You know, you think back to storage systems, which are very tightly integrated, especially the monolithic ones. A storage appliance tends to look like commodity hardware and software on top, with maybe the odd tweak here and there, but still, even though it's on an HCL list, it's quite specific hardware, and it is generally, you know, commodity, because that's the way that the SDS market went.
Yeah, if you look up NetApp, you would argue that's an appliance. A lot of them were built out of commodity hardware very early on. They were commodity hardware. Certainly in the good old days, you could go onto an Isilon, and when you hit the hardware, it would tell you which Supermicro board and chassis it was based on. The only bespoke piece of hardware in an Isilon at one point, I'm not sure if it's still the case, was the InfiniBand card, which had some cache on it.
Right.
It's the only difference. You could build it yourself if you were prepared to live without the cache.
And the support, of course.
Yeah, and the support, and the fact that you shouldn't do that, but you could have done.
Yeah, technically, I mean, I guess that's the key bit, isn't it? So then I've got step number four, and I've called this infrastructure abstraction, this fourth one. Now, what I'm trying to say here is that, especially if you look at, say, cloud, because we should think of cloud as part of a software-defined model, because it absolutely is in that sense. But if you look at the most ideal solution is for us not to be worried about the physical hardware we're deploying on. And what I mean by that is, imagine I give you a box and it's got a certain processor speed, certain amount of memory, and the devices themselves could operate at a certain speed. You know, I give you 10 SSDs. If I now put a load more capacity in that box, should the user be given the benefit of that capacity, or should they have to buy it? So should that additional performance and resource be given out as part of quality of service, rather than just be a function of the capability of the underlying hardware? And I think we've started to see a bit more abstraction around SDS, where what you get is what you've paid for or what you've requested, rather than what the physical hardware can deliver to you.
And then if we start thinking about how some of the gateway products work, in places like Amazon and Google, you know, these cloud gateways, which some provide blocks, some very often they provide file serving. Yeah, they're definitely an SDS solution.
Mm. And then finally, I've put one here, which I think is an evolution of what we've seen already. We have probably over the last 3 or 4 years have started to see some vendors, especially the infrastructure vendors that like HPE and Dell and so on, have started to partner with the software storage providers and package solutions on their hardware. So, and the reason I thought this one was interesting, because it's a different lead in terms of the engagement to get into that vendor, and it may well be delivered out of a different team. So it may not come out of the storage team. It might come out of the HPC team or the AI team, as they're going in to try and deliver a solution, and they are able to take that software package and add it to the bill of materials and to the solution and deliver it. And that's a different model from the one we might have thought of traditionally, where you go to a vendor and you buy storage because you want storage from them.
Yeah, it's an integrator model, I would have thought. But often we get in the big hardware vendors working as systems integrators as well.
But I guess the difference here is that, you know, they can add the software as part of the infrastructure, rather than necessarily have to think, oh, you've got to buy this extra box or this box and this box. We can just press a button that adds software to it. And I think that's quite a powerful part of the solution.
Yeah, I think it's been an HPE model for quite some time. More so
than any
of the other big server vendors. It's certainly been an HPE model.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what do you think defines SDS? Do you think it's even possible to put a definition around it? Because you've already said, Martin, you think that, you know, it's almost ubiquitous anyway, that software defined storage or storage defined as software is the way we're doing things. But, I mean, we did have a different definition, which was very woolly years ago, where we talked about policy-based and API, and it was sort of connected to the cloud and sort of not cloud. And I'm not sure whether that's really relevant anymore, because so many of those definitions are probably applicable to any storage platform.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, SDS is in the eye of a beholder. If I think it's SDS, it's SDS. To a certain extent, we can talk about it, whether it's API driven, it's policy. Is it built on commodity hardware? Yeah, pretty much should be. Lots of things which could be in extensible. Can I do stuff with it? Is it programmatic? As we said, APIs, but does it have a well-defined CLI? I almost get the feeling that you can look at almost any piece of storage out there these days and say that's pretty close to SDS. There's a few exceptions, but not that many.
I'll give you a good example. Look at what the discussion we had with Dell about PowerStore. PowerStore is running within virtual machines sitting on that infrastructure. So yeah, without a doubt, it is software-defined storage. We know, for instance, HPE with Primera, they changed a lot of the internal code from the legacy or the heritage of the 3-part system, and they rewrote a lot of that to use containers. So they rewrote this to be much more flexible in terms of software development and rollout and so on. So I think even when you look at those sort of platforms, you know, platforms you might have thought were very hardware-specific storage solutions, they're not really. They're just like everything else. They are all software based, and that is the way we've headed.
I think there's an argument that pretty much everything out there is SDS. Some of it is artificially tied to a hardware platform. As we said, PowerStore's you can't buy the, as far as I know, you can't actually really go and buy the PowerStore software, but it's a slight exception. But you can, and then run it on an HPE platform. You could if you virtualized it.
Yeah, they wouldn't be impressed with that, would they? But yeah, that comes down to more of a business model then, a discussion about the consumption model based on that business model and the licensing. So there are no technical reasons why you couldn't necessarily take that software and run it where you wanted to. It becomes a commercial decision for Dell to decide that it's not going to sell you that software directly the way you want it to.
Yeah.
But that's because they want to sell you more hardware.
Yeah. That's interesting, yeah. And then you've got a Pure could be sold as a software product. As far as I know, it's not.
Now, they do sell a cloud version of their software,
yeah,
which is a very modified version of the FlashArray software. The challenge they would have, and that this is where they could be an interesting sort of diversion from that in terms of the current market, is they've got a very specific hardware architecture which builds a flash translation layer on the modules that they've got within the appliance. Unless you could somehow reproduce that with your own hardware, I'm not sure how you do that. But of course, they're sort of licensing it in such a way that you don't really have to care that it's being sold to you as an appliance, because you can buy it, you know, using the sort of the evergreen, the pure as a service thing. So maybe that's one of the areas where SDS isn't as strong as it used to be, because in terms of what we thought SDS was originally, where we thought we wanted to separate hardware and software. Mm. In fact, and we shouldn't jump ahead of ourselves, and maybe we should save that towards the end, because that might be an interesting angle.
Well, you mentioned something. You can buy pure software and it runs in a modified form within a cloud. This is also what we're seeing, and I think this is what pushes some of the SDS stories. The number of storage products which you traditionally would have thought was hardware, but you can buy to run in the cloud, which will run in a instance on AWS, GCP, Azure. More and more of these are appearing in that form. So they are SDS, they are software. Now they may decide that they're going to package and sell them as a hardware type platform. If you're running it on premises, that really does make it really obvious that they're really a software product.
Yeah. I think one of the things I would say about that is, I mean, I love the idea that you could have virtual appliances of things, cloud versions of things as well. One of the things I think that's really relevant to that bit is that the key feature there and the key benefit is the feature the software platform offers. So for example, if I wanted to replicate data on premises to the cloud, and I can use the same software solution to run the storage in both locations, the big benefit to me there is that obviously I get the benefit of maybe perhaps efficient replication, more consistent security model. I might not have to move entire data, and I might be able to move deltas back and forth quite efficiently. So for lots of reasons, it could be really beneficial to me to have the same software component there, even if the service is delivered on the hardware from the vendor in one scenario, or a cloud VM or something like that. So that's where I think the SDS comes into its own there.
It does. Certainly is an availability solution, a DR solution. You've seen that quite common. You run your hardware appliance on premises, but you'll have it replicating back into a software appliance running in a cloud.
So I thought I'd just make a list of the different areas I've seen things where we've seen SDS floating around. And, you know, we can look at open source. We should discuss open source in a bit more detail in a second. But, you know, Ceph, OpenEBS, Rook, they're all sort of current products, but there's plenty that have gone on before that you've already mentioned. And then commercial products like Weka Storage OS, Portworks, Hedvig, Storepool, Datacall, Hammerspace, StoreOne, lots of people we've spoken to over the years, all of which are very much in the storage arena. Virtual appliances, cloud appliances, but more than that, you know, there's S3, there's Backblaze, there's Wasabi. We're just giving you an API which allows you to consume this. So it's storage as a service as well as software defined in some respects. And then there are a whole lot of file systems we haven't really talked to. You know, LizardFS, there's Gluster, there's other file systems that are out there that we've talked about previously, all of which are software. And it's amazing to see that there is a massive diversity of different products out there.
But there are. I mean, and when we start talking about file systems, we start going, there's a long heritage of this. We can go back over 20 years to the early days of GPFS or MMFS as it was then, and spectrum scale as it is now. So we can push right back and have that discussion of, was that software defined storage? I could probably make some very bold claims for MMFS or GPFS, but it certainly was. And certainly when you're running it on top of an SP2 and you had the high speed switch, it really did allow you to do stuff which today, which we would think is SDS.
Yeah, I put SVC down on that list as well, although I didn't read it out, because SVC has been since 2000.
Yeah,
I think clearly that was a virtualization technology originally for existing storage, so you could present that the storage from another appliance through the SVC, and it was great for mobility and various other things. But obviously, that's now part of the flash system. But you could still build your own. You could still go and take an SVC, take some JBODs, build a solution quite happily. Is that software defined? In some respects, I think it still is.
It was, yet again. It had a very strict HCL at the time, probably still does. You had to run it on IBM's hardware, and it would tell you the hardware. And but technically, there was no real reason why it couldn't have run on any server.
Yeah, I agree. So everything's SDS. Everything's SDS going forward. Is that a fair comment?
Not quite. I would say at the high end, PowerMax is not. Well, I don't think it is. The HP HDS equivalent probably isn't. IBM? Well, considering the heritage of that was just a pay of RS6000s running their software, and you could log on to it and you could see it was AIX, and it was, well, okay, it was doing some low-level stuff in the kernel, but it was SDS in all intents and purposes.
I think I would class the current Hitachi products as SDS because they're running the storage virtual operating system, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
And that can be run in a virtual machine. It can be run in the cloud. It can be run. I don't remember having seen it anywhere else other than running an appliance, but you technically can run it in other places. So that can be done. So, you know, there's very little left. I mean, you're right. Maybe the high-end EMC, maybe, you know, I don't know. Yeah, it's very difficult to pick up.
At one point, you could get a VMAX VM. It was huge.
Wow. Okay. I don't think I've ever seen that.
It was a test sort of thing to have a play with, you know, as they did with a lot of their devices, but I seem to remember that. But it was absolutely massive, and I don't know what it allowed you to do and how much hardware emulation they were doing within it. But yeah, probably when they moved across to the Intel architecture, I suspect if you looked at it, there was quite a lot of commodity in there, and it wouldn't have been that hard for them to become non-bespoke and just pure commodity if they'd really wanted to. They weren't going to. They make too much money out with it. The profit margins are too high.
Yeah. Okay, so what do we think the challenges of SDS are then? I picked my first one on this list is this idea of wisdom of the crowd, where we're starting to see a lot more vendors building in SaaS solutions that allow you to analyze the data from the appliance online. They'll give you feedback on maybe configuration issues, or maybe they'll highlight things like potential bugs or misconfiguration errors and various other things. But essentially, it's a collection, it's a knowledge-based collection of data that allows you to get more value out of that, simply because that solution is deployed across thousands of customers and they can give you a certain degree of feedback. That, to me, only seems to be from commercial vendors, and specifically commercial vendors that have got a heritage of delivering to the enterprise, HP, EMC, IBM, Dell, all the sort of companies. So is that a big loss?
Yes, I think it's becoming more and more important. Look at Nimble. Why did HP buy Nimble? Yeah. Actually, because Nimble obviously were a startup, and probably their best thing was their analytics engine, which ran in the cloud.
Yeah.
In fact, the cloud for a startup allows them to do these things in a lot easier than it would have been if without cloud. They can get all this data, they can carry out all kinds of machine learning on it, and they can do so. We've had analytics tools running in vendors for a long time. This is what arrays were doing. EMC famously used it supposedly for analyzing workloads as they were trying to work out the best algorithms for fast disk clearing.
And we had call home well before that.
And NetApp's systems would tell you how badly you were running, whether you should consider Deduke, they should give you something. So they've been around for a long time.
Yeah. So I don't see any reason why other vendors couldn't put this together, but we've got some gaps that need to be thought of. Like, for instance, where would you push this data? Who would store it? Who would do the analytics?
Yeah.
Are there any standards around obfuscation so you can hide personal information and so on? But it seems to me like there's an opportunity here for a sort of generic process in order to report data around certain storage activities. So, for instance, understanding devices that fail or work effectively or have challenges or bugs. You know, there's certain collective data that perhaps we could share if we had some sort of tool to do it with. And maybe that would be something useful that the industry could support. Not non-commercial, if you like, non-profit. But I can't see that ever happening because there's commercial advantage to everybody else to build their own version of that. Now, that leads us on to the idea of where open source is. And it could well be that the open source model, it becomes a challenger in that area and is also a challenger to the commercial products. And open source could be a real threat, couldn't it?
It could be, not that analytics space, but I think in the SDS, the general SDS, it's a real challenger. And it's the heart of many of the products which we've talked about.
It is. That is true. Yeah. You know, they couldn't have done it without the open source products in the first place. I think if I'm going to sound really old when I say this, but if I look back and think where open source was, you know, 15, 20 years ago, when Linux was very early, which was what, 25 years ago, but when Linux was very early in the market and all the rest of it, I think I looked at open source and thought, yeah, great. A bunch of people just getting together to write stuff. That's going to require a lot more coordination, structure, probably not the level of diligence and stuff that they would need to put in. But actually, that's a totally misunderstood view of the way things are, because open source has developed into an environment where the programming skills are just immense and the standards are all there, and that there is as good as, if not better than, commercial solutions that you would buy off the shelf.
I tend to agree with that, as long as you keep on the main track. As soon as you go off track, if you're going for something which is new, it's quite hard for you to think, okay, I'm going to use that. If it's, because you only have to look at the number of contributors it's got, try and work out whether it's actually going to survive or not. And that's quite a difficult thing to do. It's quite a hard call. If you look at the number of file systems which have gone by the fallen by the wayside, really, within open source, for instance, that's probably a good place to say. And many of them have fallen past Razor, things like that. It doesn't help when your main coder commits crimes and ends up in prison. That doesn't help anything particularly. But I think you have to be a bit careful. It does seem that most of the open source storage is now owned by IBM, by Red Hat. Red Hat seemed to acquire quite a lot of it. So
it didn't affect McAfee too badly, did it? Their CEO getting into, did he get into trouble,
John McAfee? Yeah, he's been in trouble. Maybe he's the exception which proves the rule.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't think he actually killed anybody.
No, I'm not sure. I'm fairly sure he didn't kill anybody. I think he might like the idea of toting these guns around, but I don't think he's killed anybody. That's fine. Okay, yeah, I agree. Yeah, that all makes sense. And then I suppose, you know, all tied to that is that whole hardware accessibility and, you know, access to components and supply chain and possibly even early access to technology that you would get if you were a very large vendor making a product that's well known in the market. You know, as a software provider, especially somebody who's a open source or new in the market, you might be well behind the curve to get into the newer technologies, and that in its own right could be a bit of a challenge. But I don't think any of those are unsurmountable for the for anything to do with SDS, whether it's a commercial product or an open source product.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you just have to look at Linux and just look at where it was and how quickly it became adopted by the enterprise. If a product's there and it's the right time, people will adopt it if it gives you something which you need.
Okay, so let's we're almost on the home straight here, and I've got a few additional questions to ask, because I think this is where it starts to get interesting, where we start thinking about where we're going to go from this point forward. So I think we're fairly confident that we're seeing, bar one point I'll raise in a minute, we're pretty confident we're seeing pretty much everything moving towards being effectively a software-defined model, and it's de facto, it's just the way it is because of the way that the technology's gone. One technology, will this affect things? And that's SmartNICs. Will we see the level of adoption in something like SmartNICs come in to the extent that it allows us to offload a lot of our compute, and then we're sort of pushing features back into hardware, FPGAs, and almost like back into microcode again. I'm using that as an old term, but you know what I mean. You know, do we think SmartNICs have got a chance of challenging this?
Yes, I do. But they're going to have to provide something different, and they're going to have to show a value model which works for people. Now, a value model may be that it frees up your CPU to do more useful work. That might be, and it allows you to drop your licensing costs, say, for people like Oracle or Microsoft, because you can use more of your cores to do more of the stuff you want it to do. So I think it could. I'm not 100% convinced that it will. We're quite specialized. I'm expecting them to make inroads into the enterprise, but very much into smaller businesses. Not sure.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not going to jump the gun here, but and I haven't told you this yet, but next week we will be talking to NVIDIA and the guys who were part of the Mellanox team, who are now part of NVIDIA. And I had a little bit of a briefing from them last week. And it may well be that there are a few angles where SmartNICs could offer something better than just basically a general purpose offload. And I think you're right about that, that if you think that all you're getting here is offloading some cores onto a card that's sitting in the same box, you haven't really gained anything, because it's cores running on this card versus cores running in your central machine. And then inevitably, the cores running in your central generic CPU are going to be faster than the ones you can put on a card. So there's got to be some value add to that. And I'll leave that as a teaser, and we'll talk about that when we come to talk with NVIDIA.
Oh, that's interesting. It is, and that makes sense for somebody like NVIDIA, that they would look at it that in that manner.
Yeah. So we'll come back to that one, but let's talk about where we stand with the current crop of vendors and their products and their offerings. And I do wonder whether we think we need things to change in some respects, or whether we think we're in a good place. And I'll give you an example. We use the PowerStore example, and the fact that there isn't really a way to buy PowerStore and run it yourself. Now, you might say you don't want to do that, but you might want to. And I wonder whether we're going to see a need to change both pricing and consumption models, that degree of transparency we've talked about in the last few months, or not, or whether, you know, it really makes no difference to where we are, we should just carry on.
Oh, we do need to change the consumption models, and probably the pricing, but certainly the consumption model. So with software features, we need the ability to turn software features on and off. We need to be able to scale them up and back down again. So for a couple of months, you might need a particular feature, you turn it on, or you just need it for... It comes back to some of the things which were always a bugbear for anybody who worked in enterprise storage. But when you licensed a particular feature, you'd license it for the whole array. We want more than that. We want not just to license it for the whole device. Well, we want the ability to license for a part of the device, but also potentially just for a month or two. Now, SDS would allow them to do that, but at the moment, there's not the appetite there to do it.
And I wonder whether also that, if you look at the way the margins have gone and costs have gone, I mean, you know better than me because you deal with this every day of the week, but the cost of storage has gone down so much that the margins must be razor thin on certain parts of the market. You know, I don't know how some vendors make money when I see some of the costs that they're quoting. And I wonder whether there's an opportunity here to say, we want to make more value add out of the actual features and push the hardware down to the, you know, and make it just a cost plus 10%. Here, that's a silly number, but I'm just making one up. You know, make the hardware costs very transparent in order to be able to charge for the features and a lot more granularity, and therefore and charge more. I think that would seem reasonable.
It would. There are some painful discussions to be had with vendors, and there are some painful areas which I might need to look at their business models. If I had bought my software as software and not clothed it with hardware, I've not bought it tied to the hardware, where does the vendor get their ongoing refresh revenue from. Because if I bought it with a perpetual license, depending on if it's a perpetual license, so maybe we have to move, maybe they all have to move to subscription models. Because otherwise you pay back, your upfront cost is always your biggest cost in some ways. And then you just keep paying your annual support. And the annual support is not as much as the big bang purchase you make every 5 years, 4 years, whatever your refresh cycle is. So there's some modeling and that to be done around that for the vendors to work out whether they can still make money in this way. And does the cost of the software go up?
Yeah, so that asks a really tricky question around where we are in terms of the market, in terms of maturity, and whether there's plenty of additional stuff to add. So for instance, if you buy a product from a vendor that charges you a subscription model and you pay a certain amount every month, I think you'd want something for that money. You know, rather than just the right to store your data on a particular bit of hardware, you want to see new features, you want to see new functionality, you want to see improvements to that, maybe better encryption, maybe whatever it happens to be. Whereas if you buy a perpetual license, then you don't necessarily have the rights to expect new features and upgrades simply because that's what maintenance is for. That's where the maintenance comes in. So there's maybe a big change around the model there that needs to be thought out to make that work properly.
There is, and that for some vendors will need a complete rewrite of their code base.
Mm,
because they can't turn things on and off quite like that.
Yes, good point. And that comes down to whether you're a good SDS solution or whether you're a weaker one, I suppose, in that sense.
Yeah.
Okay, last question then, because I think we're saying we think that SDS is a success. Where do we see things going in the future? So the reason why I'm asking it in that way is I think that a lot of what we talked about here is literally what we expect it to be, software-defined storage. But I wonder whether in the future that the storage platforms and the storage software need to have an extra degree of intelligence. So we need to start seeing things like more data mobility built into our solutions, more data management, more ability to process data more effectively, maybe some new protocols around how we access our data and APIs. Maybe file systems need to be more intelligent to build in ransomware protection and data protection. So I can see a lot of opportunity for the software features to come into a slightly higher level function up than just purely delivering a storage array to the customer.
Yeah, and I'm trying to work out what that looks like at the moment. What it's going to be, what makes it compelling? Because at the moment we're almost saying, well, okay, so storage is functionally complete. Obviously, it's not. So what are these services? What do they look like? Why do I want to use them?
Yeah.
What does it enable my business to do that it couldn't do with what it's got today?
Mm. Okay, so something simplistic then. Simplistic as saying, think about features that are provided by a company like Comprise, where they're adding in something that allows you to archive out your data in some sort of controlled fashion and put it on a cheaper medium. Wouldn't it be better if that was built into a file system to a degree that allowed you to do that very much more efficiently, and the reporting and everything else that goes in with it was built into the file system, into the product in the beginning? And I could pick on, say, Cumulo as a company that's trying to do something like that with the way they develop their technology, or maybe Hammerspace, the way they're trying to do stuff with data mobility and making it more effective, and that additional metadata and other triggers you can add within to the platform to make it more intelligent. I see that as being possibly the way that we're going to see more value come out of these products.
Yeah, and I don't think it's been communicated very well at the moment. I don't think any of these companies are actually communicating what they can do above and beyond the incumbent storage vendors. I think they need to explain this, but they need to, I hate this phrase, they need to tell a better story.
No, that's true. So maybe that's the conclusion of our conversation today, is that, yes, SDS has been a good success. It's everywhere. It's effectively the market. But actually, we need a better story in terms of how you tell us about where you're going to take it next.
Yeah, if you're a new SDS vendor, where are you going to take this? Why? And it's always the case with any new product, but why do I use yours? Because SDS as a concept's been around for years. Most of the traditional storage vendors have got there in some shape or form. They're very mature. They're very reliable. For one thing, you don't mess around with, as we've said a number of times, is you don't take risks with your data, or you shouldn't do. If you do, well,
yeah. Sounds good. Okay, Martin, great. Wonderful to catch up and chat with you as usual. And I'm interested to see this the year as we go forward, 2021, what sort of vendors we'll talk to in that SDS arena, because we know we talked to quite a few of them, and I think we could have some very interesting conversations this year.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to some good conversations, certainly with some of the newer companies and the existing companies, but it would be nice to be wowed.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Martin, good to talk to you, and catch up next time.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked, or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.